It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
And he's going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap, back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzine takes the snap. Pass
intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, John Schmel.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. You can participate in the program in that way as well as we talk Giants football with you. Giants have 6 OTAs in the book. They are off today, 4 next week, then mandatory minicamp. We can talk about that. If you still want to discuss a little bit about the Will Hill and Jaron Holsley suspensions and Will Hill's release, we can do that as well. But we'll start off the show with our final look around the NFC East. Early in the week, we talked to Dave Spadaro of PhiladelphiaEagles.com, Mickey Spagnola of DallasCowboys.com on Wednesday. And today, it's Mike Jones. He's joined us before, a good friend of the program from the Washington Post. Mike, good morning. Thanks for the time. How's everything?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Mike, just want to get into a couple things here with you for a second. Number one, how much different are these off-season workouts with a new head coach down there in Washington this year?
Well, there's just a little bit of a new energy. Jay Gruden is a younger guy, kind of a little more upbeat, more hands-on as well. And the guys, you know, anytime you have a change that kind of lights a fire in their guys, they seem to be a little more motivated. Not that they weren't motivated with Mike Shanahan, because last year they were excited to be coming off the division title run. They wanted to build on that. But there's just a little bit of more of a newness. They say that Gruden has brought a breath of fresh air to the franchise.
Now, it's interesting. A lot of times you bring in a new head coach, they can kind of bring in an entirely new staff and kind of build it the way they want. But Jim Haslett returns. Sean McVay got promoted in-house. How many guys did Gruden bring in, and how much is he really changing the way they're doing things over there?
Well, he's changing things to a degree. The Redskins management liked what they had in place in a lot of areas. I felt like they could do better in some areas. So they kept Chris Forster, the offensive line coach, who was very heavily involved in the planning of the run game because they had one of the top rushing attacks. Sean McVay had worked with Jay Gruden both in Tampa, and they were both assistants to John Gruden, and then in the UFL when they were with the Florida Tuskers. So they are very close. Their families are also very close. And Jim Haslett had worked with Jay Gruden as well. On defense, Haslett has more of a say now. He couldn't even pick his assistants under Mike Shanahan. He was given guys that he was going to work with, and he was like, man, you know, I don't have anybody that I'm familiar with working. Bobby Slowick, Bob Slowick, Shanahan's longtime assistant in Denver, was the secondary's coach, and then they fired him, and then the linebacker's coach left and went to UCLA, and then Shanahan hired him back to be the assistant linebacker's coach, and his son, who is a Division III wide receiver, was working with the linebackers as well, and Haslett was like, I can't even pick my own guys. So now he had a say. He brought in pass rushing technician and Brian Baker. He brought back Kirk Olivadotti, who's very good for the inside linebackers. So he feels like he's going to be able to have the defense coached up and playing more like he would like them to be, a little more aggressive than Mike Shanahan's style. Because there were times when he would dictate or make calls or come into the meeting and say, this is what I want our defense to do. Offensively, you're going to see a lot of the same running game. You're going to see some tweaks in the passing game, but they're both Shanahan and the Grudens are from the West Coast offense tree, so there's going to be a lot of carryover there as well.
Well, Mike, let's start on the offensive side of the ball. I don't think anyone would argue that's the strength of the Redskins right now. They might have the best group of skill position guys in the division. And I want to start with Alfred Morris first. You mentioned that there's not going to be a ton of changes, same system with the running game. So we're still going to see a lot of that one-cut plays, with the stretch plays and things like that, they're going to continue to play to Alfred Morris's strengths in this offense?
Yeah, they definitely are. And they're hoping that he can continue to build. He had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons just coming off the Pro Bowl. They have worked to upgrade their offensive line. They've got Trent Williams back. They moved left guard Corey Lickensteiger to center, which is probably his more natural position. They signed Sean Laval from Cleveland. And they drafted two kids in the third round, Spencer Long out of Nebraska and Morgan Moses, right tackle out of UVA. They will compete with Chris Chester, the right guard, and Tyler Columbus, the right tackle. I don't know if they'll beat them out yet because it's still very early, but long-term, they see those guys being the answer to this front. So the run game will remain the same, and they're hoping that the changes on the offensive line lead to better pass protection.
And I got to imagine that after a couple games where Jordan Reed last year really kind of broke out, showed what he could do, then he had some injury issues, the Redskins expect him to be a pretty big weapon in this offense this year.
They do. If he can stay healthy, then that's a huge weapon they have there because he's got great size, he's got great versatility. He can line up as a tight end. He can, you know, sometimes they use him almost like an H-back coming out of the backfield as a receiver. They split him out wide as a wide receiver, line him up in the slot. But he's got to stay healthy, and that's something that he has struggled with even back when he was at Florida. If he's healthy, you have his size to go with DeSean Jackson's speed, Pierre Garçon's versatility and speed and physicality, and so you have three very good pass catchers there.
We're joined by Mike Jones, covers the Redskins for the Washington Post. And Mike, I don't need to tell you, hamstrings, especially for speedy wide receivers, can be a tricky thing. How serious is this with DeSean Jackson? Is this something that you think might linger, or do you think with the time the players get off between OTAs and training camp, he can come in and participate at the end of July 100%?
Yeah, I think so. It's so far in advance of the season and even training camp that they said it's a minor tweak. He possibly could come back next week, but even if he doesn't, I don't think there's cause for concern because you want him to be fully healthy. And like you said, you don't want him to go out there before he's ready and then have this injury linger. But they're not concerned. Jackson himself said he's not concerned. And so they think by July, if not earlier, he definitely will be healthy.
Now, do they think DeSean Jackson is going to be able to quickly integrate into the system? I know there are different, you know, wings and, you know, almost philosophies within the West Coast offense, but he played with Andy Reid, a West Coast guy in Philly, Jay Gruden, a West Coast guy in Washington. How similar are those two systems for him, and is he going to be able to kind of slide in and be effective pretty quickly?
Well, he says it's very similar. John Gruden worked with Andy Reid, and so, they, you know, everybody's connected in some way in this West Coast offense, and so there's a lot of carryover. And, you know, there are different wrinkles, but the thing that jumps out, even in the limited time we've seen him, is just the speed. You know, it doesn't matter what route you put this guy on, he can get past the defense. Or, you know, on a reverse, it just was amazing how he just blew by guys. So they will find a number of ways to use him and take advantage of that speed, and I think he will fit well into the offense.
Well, and I saved the most important player on offense for last, and that's Robert Griffin III. Do you think that knee is finally 100% back, where he has the confidence in it, and he could look like the player he looked like in year number one? Do you think they're going to ask him to run a little bit less? What's your take on where he is physically and how the Redskins hope to use him this year?
He is healthy physically, and he's gone back to the gone back to his fundamentals. He worked with Terry Shea, the passing coach, during this offseason, kind of changed some of his technique from what Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan asked him to do. They wanted him to widen his base a little bit and some things with his release. He went back to the way that he had prepared for the NFL. He looks more confident. He looks a little quicker. He's getting the ball out a little faster. He's got a higher release, more of a stepping into throws a little bit better. So they feel very good about where he is. He's not going to run as much, I don't think. There will be times when they sprinkle that into there or he takes off and scrambles when a play breaks down. But he looks like he's got his explosiveness back. There was a couple plays where things broke down around him and he was able to burst out of the pocket and then roll out to the outside and find a receiver. That explosiveness we did not see last year.
So maybe instead of having the read option as be the base of the offense, it'll be something they sprinkle in from time to time when they might need a big play in a big spot?
Yeah, well, you know, when you really look at the numbers, they only ran the read option 25% of the time his rookie year and then 18% of the time last year. They gave that look a lot of the time,
right,
but then didn't actually run those plays. So I imagine, though, it's going to be even less than what it was in the years past.
All right, Mike, let's jump to the defensive side of the ball very quickly. Mike Jones in the Washington Post. Still fair to say the strength of this defense lies in the front four with Brian Arakpo and, you know, his ability to rush the passer and the rest of the guys you have in that defensive line and an outside linebacker?
Yeah, with Brian Arakpo and Ryan Kerrigan, both those guys, Pro Bowl outside linebackers, they drafted Trent Murphy, another outside linebacker, because they feel like you can never have too many pass rushers. This kid led the nation in sacks last year for Stanford. They will work him into the mix as well. They also added Jason Hatcher. He will be up front along with Barry Cofield when they're in that nickel package, and they want to try to get more pressure on the quarterback because they know that once they get pressure on the quarterback, that helps everything in your secondary with your safeties and your cornerback.
How are they going to replace London Fletcher at middle linebacker?
Well, Perry Riley, who's been next to London Fletcher the last 3 years, is going to take on a little bit of a larger playmaking role. He actually led the team in tackles last year anyway. It looks like Keenan Robinson, the fourth-round pick out of Texas in 2012, is ready. He has been a guy that they really liked, but he was injured second half of his rookie season. He had a torn pectoral muscle, and last year he missed all of that with another torn pectoral muscle on the other side. He knows, he's been in all the meetings, even while he was rehabbing, so he knows the system. He's got great size, good speed, versatility, able to cover tight ends downfield, also make plays in the run game. They feel like he is probably the guy that's going to step into that position where London Fletcher left.
Now, we know Jim Haslett runs that 3-4 defense, loves to bring pressure. You mentioned earlier in the interview how Mike Shanahan would sometimes jump into those meeting rooms, kind of tell him what kind of game plan he wanted him to run. Should we expect even more pressure and things of that nature, more blitz packages being brought by Jim Haslett this year now that he has a little bit more freedom?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. The players have said, D'Angelo Hall and Brian Arakpo both said, you're going to see Jim Haslett unleashed this year. So we'll see. I mean, it's all early. They're in May. They've run some, gone through some practices and they're learning the system. But Haslett says they're going to be more aggressive. The players say they're going to be more aggressive. I think that's what Jay Gruden wants them to be. So we'll see how it pans out.
How about the secondary? It's been a bit of an issue from time to time for the Redskins, especially that safety position. Corner, not so much. What have the Giants done to address their issues in the secondary this offseason, Mike?
Well, they signed Ryan Clark, from Pittsburgh. Yeah, he's going to be 35 later this year, but he still is a very savvy veteran. He will help solidify that free safety position while they continue to groom the rookies that they drafted from last year, Philip Thomas and Bakari Rambo, and also Brandon Merriweather is back. He's 2 years removed now from his torn ACL. Last year, he was still kind of working his way back, just like Griffin was, and also he had to play a lot of free safety because they didn't really have anybody there.
Right.
Now he's going to be at his natural position, going to be able to play strong safety, and they think he's going to make more of an impact.
How are they going to try to supplement and help out D'Angelo Hall at corner?
Well, they've got David Amerson, their second-round pick from last year. He is a 6'1", 210 pounds, big cornerback, long arms, very physical. They really feel good about how he has progressed. Jim Haslett yesterday said it's night and day between his recognition and his instincts from last year to this year. And then, they've still got to figure out who's going to be that third cornerback, if it's E.J. Biggers or Tracy Porter or one of the young guys they've drafted the last couple of years.
All right, a couple of big-picture questions before we say goodbye from Mike Jones in the Washington Post. Mike, what's the expectation level? Because clearly, you go from winning the division to being one of the worst teams in football. What's the thought of the fan base and the organization, the coaching staff this year? Do they think they have the talent here to win the NFC East and bounce back to where they were 2 years ago? Is this more of a slow build type of process? What's the expectation level right now?
Well, it can't get much worse than last year. I feel like, the NFC East, if anything is shown, anybody can win it on any given year. So they feel like they've gotten better in a lot of areas. They've improved their depth, and they can take strides forward. Will they be able to win it this year? I don't know. But they feel like long-term they have things, and they're putting the pieces in place so that way they don't have, relapses and things like that. Because the Redskins have lacked stability, haven't had back-to-back winning seasons since, I think it was 91 and 92.
Wow, that is a long time ago. I didn't realize it's been that long. Wow, I guess it's amazing when you can't find the quarterback for 20 years. How hard it is to have consecutive winning seasons, huh?
Exactly.
Mike, very quickly, you know, we hear this nationally from time to time. It kind of pops into the news. You get a front page story on ESPN.com, then it disappears. How much locally is the whole, you know, Redskins team name thing brought up? How much is it an issue locally? And generally speaking, what is the local in Washington, D.C. and the Washington Redskins fan base think about it?
It does come up a lot, unfortunately. You'd rather write about football and X's and O's, although, you know, I do have some colleagues at the Post who are beating the drum very hard for them, some of our columnists, to change the name. The fan base, the majority, the large majority, both locally and nationally, is still in favor of the name. And, you know, I think it's going to take something like FedEx and Budweiser, corporate sponsors, saying they don't like the name before the league or the Redskins would take any action, because that's what really matters. And for, you know, all indications, they're not against the name at all.
Yeah, it would seem like Daniel Snyder has absolutely no interest in, you know, maybe for lack of a better word, being bullied into changing this name unless he wants to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, it isn't just Snyder. The league also has a huge stake in this as well. You know, if Roger Goodell and the other owners, you know, force Snyder to change it, they would have to. He couldn't just say, hey, this is my team, because the league owns the name and, the, you know, all the things like that, with all the trademark and everything. You know, if Snyder said, I want to change it, I don't think the league would stop him. But right now the league is supporting him. And, you know, the corporate sponsors are supporting them.
Interesting. All right, Mike, final question. As you go into the offseason here, what are your, you know, one or two big picture things you're keeping an eye on for the Redskins, and what are going to be the keys for them this season if they want to have a successful one?
Well, they've got Griffin. He's got to continue to get better. He's got to show that he can, you know, bounce back to year one and also just be improved. We've seen young quarterbacks come in and have great rookie seasons and then, you know, across the league and then struggle in that second year. Can he take that step forward in year three like Cam Newton did last year? You know, offensively, they still have to figure out things along their offensive line. We'll see how things work out in that secondary with kind of the safeties they have that are getting up there in age. If they can, you know, generate the pass rush that they need to with the Rakbo, Kerrigan, and those guys up front, then this defense should be improved.
Mike, appreciate the time, my friend. Good stuff. We'll catch up to you again before the season starts, all right?
All right, thanks. You have a good one.
Hey, you too, man. That is Mike Jones from the Washington Post. Beat writer, covers the Washington Redskins. Does a fantastic job. Good stuff right there, folks. And I know a lot of people are sleeping on the Redskins. I don't think they're going to be very good this year. Last year, I told you, I thought Philly could win this division if they figured out Nick Foles is their starting quarterback. And I'm telling you, I think the Redskins could be a sleeper this year. If they can figure out things in the secondary, keep Merriweather healthy, figure out that second and third cornerback spot, if Amerson in year number two can be a good player, they got a great defensive line. I mean, guys, Kerrigan, Hatcher, Cofield, Arakpo, whew, that is a hell of a front, especially on third down, getting after the quarterback. Damn. Best pass rush in the division, and it's not close, by the way. It's not close. I mean, that is legitimately excellent. Their secondary leaves something to be desired. Their inside backers, in my opinion, not great. But Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson, Jordan Reed, Alfred Morris, the fact that they're not going to get away from that running game that Alfred Morris has had so much success with. I mean, geez, folks. I'm just telling you, the Redskins could be very dangerous this year. And what Mike said is right. It's all going to be a Robert Griffin III. If he can play like he did in year one and maybe even a little bit better than that and take that step forward, as Mike said, like Cam Newton did in year number three, Redskins can be dangerous. Next week, I'm going to do a whole show. We'll take your calls. We'll kind of do a Giants within the NFC East, compare and contrast, and break down the division. But I'm pretty sure today you guys still want to talk a little bit about the stuff with Hill and Hosley if you want. Ancho Roll and Tom Coughlin spoke about it yesterday. I think both guys had very strong and appropriate words. Hosley came out and apologized for his actions, you know, and Tom Coughlin, frankly, echoed a lot of stuff that I've been saying over the last couple days. One, this is your job, and if you're willing to, you know, put your job at stake by doing something foolish, what does that tell you about your priorities and where your head is at? You know, that he's simply not someone in terms of Will Hill that you can depend on, and that's why you let him go. You have a job, you need somebody here that you know is going to be there for you, and if he's not, sometimes you got to make a move. And I thought even more poignant was the point that Ancho Roll made. the defensive captain, a teammate. He said he was very disappointed that he'd spoken to Wilhelm before, trying to get him, you know, on the straight and narrow. But sometimes, you know, in the offseason, you're not around your teammates all the time. People go home. They go see their friends and their family. And you hope issues don't arise, but they do sometimes. And as Antro said, you know, he takes responsibility. He has to take responsibilities for his actions. He hopes he'll get another chance, but that's going to be his last chance. And he hopes he get his act together. But, you know, there wasn't any, like, regret or annoyance that the organization, you know, let Wilhelm go. He got it. And he's like, you know what? He should be let go. So I thought that was pretty telling. 201-939-4513. Let's take your calls and start with Micah in Tennessee. Micah, what's up?
Hey, what's up, John? How you doing?
Doing well, Micah. What's up?
Seems to be that this division is getting a lot more difficult with the Eagles and Redskins and, well, Dallas kind of going downhill.
Well, you know, Micah, it's funny. This is how I kind of break down this division right now. The Giants, to me, have the best defense. I like the Giants' defensive personnel the best, even if their pass rush might not be the best. I think the Eagles probably have the most well-rounded team, though I have some worries about their defense. I think the Cowboys are going to be better than a lot of people think. Their offense, to me, is still one of the best in the league. And they finished 8-8 last year, and their defense was the worst in franchise history. It's not going to be any worse than that, I promise you that. And then, of course, you have the Washington Redskins. We just talked about them. So I think you're going to have another situation where everyone's either between, you know, 7-9 or 10-6, and whoever gets hot at the right time or has the fewest injuries, that's who's going to win the division.
Yeah, it'll be tough to win the division, but it may happen. I think Jaron Hoseley kind of had a mature way of apologizing and stuff. I think he's probably said the right things and did the right thing by apologizing to the organization and stuff. What do you think about that?
No, for sure. You know, I thought Jaron's apology yesterday was very, very strong. He came out. He took responsibility for his action, and he basically said, look, you know, I screwed up. I know I let, you know, my teammates down. I have to be better than this. And, you know, I thought he was very adult about it, and I think it was a good step for him to come out there, talk to the media about it. He was very candid, very straight up, very forward, and I think that's the only thing you can ask of one of your players in a situation like that.
And one last question.
Yeah.
When Tom Crabtree was released by the Buccaneers, do you think the Giants may have any interest in him, or do you think we're all right at tight ends? With tight ends, sorry.
Tom Crabtree, you said?
Yeah, because he got released by the Buccaneers.
Yeah, he did. I saw that. You know, he's a guy that hasn't had a lot of production in the pros either. You know, he's not a guy that's a big receiver. He's more of a blocker. I think the Giants probably think that he mimics the skill set of Kellen Davis a little bit. So I don't think that's necessarily something the Giants would jump at, and I don't think he really adds much more than what they already have on the roster.
All right, well, thank you, man. Have a good morning.
Hey, Micah, thanks for calling in, man. Have a great weekend. Appreciate it. Good to hear from Micah down in Tennessee. And by the way, in case you guys didn't hear it, I'm going to, off Giants.com right now, I'm going to play Jaron Hoseley's opening statement from yesterday. Here's what he had to say to the media. All right, that doesn't seem to be working. Let's see if we can figure that out. Did I mute the computer? No, it's working. I don't know why that's not playing. Oh, wait, there we go. The player's volume is down. Let's try that again, shall we? Here's Jaron Hoseley talking to the media yesterday about his suspension. One more time. And now Giants.com is frozen. Boy, that's going really well. Oh, baby. All right, I'll try to cue that up. I'll have to refresh the window. Let's go to our next caller, 201-939-4513. Not enough O's in smooth, folks. Gedalia's in New Jersey next. Gedalia, what's going on?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
No problem, Gedalia. What's up, pal?
Hey, what are the Giants looking at right now going into minicamp?
I don't understand the question. What do you mean?
Meaning, as far as what they bought in over from the draft, what undrafted players they signed, what are they looking at?
Well, I mean, I think they're hoping to see that the players are taking more steps and learning the offense. Number one, I mean, that's really, you know, the thing to watch during these OTAs. How is Eli playing in the offense? How are the receivers catching on? You know, how are the running backs doing? And you want to make sure that guys are catching on to what Ben McAdoo's teaching. And I think those are the things you're really trying to keep an eye on. Frankly, the one thing that came out yesterday that I didn't mention, Odell Beckham Jr. not practicing with, you know, hamstring soreness. You hope that he manages to get back on the field for a minicamp. Honestly, I would be surprised if he was in OTAs next week. You know, it's a hamstring. You don't want to mess around with that with one of your, you know, quick twitch, explosive wide receivers. I would hope he's on the field for minicamp, but I can't even guarantee that right now. You know, you hope you get something out of your tight ends. You know, you get somebody step up and maybe separate themselves. In my opinion, I don't think anybody at tight end has really separated themselves. We've seen a couple nice plays from each guy. I don't think anyone's really stood out from anybody else at this point. And really, I think that's what they're really trying to keep an eye on. And also, they want to see Ryan Nassib try to continue to improve to earn that number two starting quarterback spot.
All right. Is it going to be hard for the Giant offense to learn this new coaching the way McAdoo does it? It's going to be a little hard.
Well, you know what? I had a chance to talk to Ruben Randall yesterday, and he was one of the guys that obviously had some issues from time to time learning Kevin Gilbride's system. And I asked him straight up to compare what it was like playing in Kevin Gilbride's system and learning that system to what it's like learning McAdoo's system. And a huge, genuine smile went across his face, and he was like, it's so much easier. You know, they tell you what to do, and you do it. There's not a lot of reading and reacting. So I think it is a lot easier for a lot of these guys to grasp this system than it was what they were doing in the past. And I think, look, if there was one benefit to me to moving on from Kevin Gilbride, I thought he was a fantastic offensive coordinator. I've made no qualms about saying that time and time again, is that I think in a simpler system, guys can come in and be more effective quicker because the system, especially for wide receivers and tight ends, is a lot easier to learn.
Right. All right. Thanks for taking my call. Have a good day.
Thanks. I appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Let's try one more time on Jaron Hosley talking to the media yesterday.
I think, first of all, I really, you know, I think I need to get this off my chest. I want to apologize to my, you know, to the ownership of the New York Giants, those guys, because, you know, they the one that believed in me. The GM, Jerry Reese, my coaches, and most importantly, my teammates and the fans. You know, my teammates, we go on the field every day. You know, we battle together. You know, we spend time off the field together. So, you know, I really didn't want, you know, want this to be, you know, all about me and taking the attention away from the team, because it's about the team first. So I feel like I had to say that.
And there was Jaron Hosley's opening statement to the media yesterday before he was even asked a question. So I thought it was, you know, a good thing for him to say. Obviously taking responsibility for his actions and apologizing for putting himself above the team and really his dumb decisions and, you know, his dumb actions are, you know, costing the team and potentially costing himself, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you keep him around now just in case he has some issues at corner, but in my opinion, it's even tougher for him to make the team now. He already has a lot of competition, folks. He really does. You know, he's arguing right now the fifth cornerback on the roster. And if these other young guys now have an opportunity with him being suspended, you know, who knows? We'll see. 201-939-4513. Charlie's in Portland, Maine. What's going on, Chuckles?
Hey, man, I'm just eating lobster up here. That's what we do.
By the way, I walked in yesterday, and Lance goes to me, goes, John, I think Charlie just calls in to try to get me upset.
Hey, it wouldn't take much. All you have to do is Dan tell him I'm on the phone. That would be enough. the diminutive one thinks I'm wacky, but someone who talks in cliches most of the time wouldn't understand a lot of what I say anyway, right?
Oh, boy. Now we got people taking shots at Len. I mean, geez. I'm going to start a civil war between callers here.
Hey, John, I know you like, you know, you ended up picking Antrell Roll talking about Will Hill, but I didn't hear you say anything of what Prince said about Will Hill. You should have talked about that, too. Which was the other perspective, saying that Prince said that guy saved our butt so many times this last year, And if he, I hope and pray to God he doesn't go anywhere in the NFC East because it will come back to haunt us.
Well, he hasn't. Every team in the NFC East has had a chance to pick up Will Hill, and everyone decided not to. Charlie.
Yeah, but nobody ever picks anybody up on waivers. They wait till they go through waivers, and then they become a free agent. They can negotiate with a guy and do whatever they want pay-wise. So he will be picked up, John. He will be picked up before the end of the season. So he'll miss his first six games, and he'll be playing with somebody.
Hey, look, Charlie, you know I have never argued how good Will Hill is a player. I've never argued his impact. I've never argued what he brings to the football field. My point is that eventually you get to the point with the guy where he can't be relied upon, as a person and as a player, in terms of his relationship with the coaching staff in the front office. If you tell a player that this is it, you do this again, you're gone, and he does it again, then you know what? You're obligated to let him go. You have to. Otherwise, you lose all face with the rest of the
team. I totally understand that, but that's not something they ever should have sent to him. They should have said, look, we're behind you. Until the NFL gives up on you, we're not giving up on you. That's my stance. That's what they should have done. But let's move on.
Fair enough.
He's gone right now.
Yep.
But Hosley, I mean, the poor guy, this was for pot. Which is totally. I hope they change this policy and make it quick because this is ridiculous.
Well, Charlie, in fairness, we don't know it was marijuana. All we know it was a non-performance enhancing drug.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, he's not probably recreational cocaine. That would have been a lot worse. But anyway, I just think he was up there, but you could see. The poor guy was like he was up there like he just murdered six people, or you know what I mean. It was just like he didn't. I'm glad he did it. I'm glad he apologized. But come on, man. I mean, in the back of his head, I was looking at him. I'm going, I know he's saying, what the hell am I up here for? What did I do?
He knows why he's up there, Charlie. And I'm going to cue this up from Montreal Roll in a bit, something he said yesterday. Look, whether or not you agree with the rule and whether or not the rule's even going to be there in 5 years, those are fair things to talk about. I understand that. The rule is there. These guys know the rules. They know when they're going to get tested. And if you're frankly dumb enough to get caught, that's why you have to be so sorry because, it's just stupid. You know what the rule is. Okay. Don't jeopardize your million-dollar career and the rest of the team by doing something like this. It's just dumb.
I know. I agree with that part. He was dumb doing it. But he had to get up there and do that anyway. God, he wants to stay on the team. He wants to. I'm sure he was sorry for it. I'm sure he was, it's sincere. It wasn't fake. But anyway, the thing is with him, he never can get on the field anyway because of hamstrings.
Well, that's true.
Speaking of hamstrings, our number one draft pick.
Yep.
Not only does he not like to practice, he also has hamstring problems. Who is the guy that Bill Parcells called out in New England? Because they always had hamstring problems. I can't remember the guy's
Terry
name.
Terry Glenn?
The wide receiver. Yeah, Terry Glenn. And the thing is with hamstrings, they always turn up. There's always a problem. This guy should be doing Pilates or something. Because Pilates elongates the muscles, gives elasticity back to the tendons. If these guys are just pumping iron, no wonder they've got hamstrings.
Charlie,
problems.
I will tell you this. The Giants have a yoga instructor come in here twice a week for yoga. So the guys are doing that stuff now.
Well, he better come four times a week for him because somebody who has hamstring problems are going to have them
the
time.
It's only a little bit of soreness, Charlie. It's not like this guy pulled something and he's going to be out 2 months now. So don't panic just yet. Now, I don't want to add fuel to the Charlie fire here and, panic anybody. But I will say this. Odell Beckham does have a sprinter background. His mother was a sprinter. He ran track in high school. And as everybody well knows, with those type of, professional runners that, run in competition, leg injuries are not uncommon. Things like hamstring pulls are not uncommon. That doesn't mean that Beckham's going to be a chronic hamstring guy. I'm not saying that. But it is something to keep an eye on, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Hey, they should also, there's things called Tai Chi and Qigong. It would really help. Hey, I just wanted to mention something about Pete Carroll. Okay? Pete Carroll bought into this philosophy. You ever hear the books called The Inner Game?
What is it called?
The Inner Game by Jim Galway, The Inner Game of Tennis, The Inner Game of Golf, The Inner Game of Dance. He wrote a bunch of books. When Pete Carroll was at USC, he ran into Jim Galway and he read his books. And, John, you should pick his books up. Everybody in the Giant organization should pick his books up because Pete Carroll bought into his philosophy and how it basically it's about the inner game of life in one sense, but stopping all the chatter, being focused, actually utilizing your strengths, not focusing on your weaknesses. And that's what Pete, and when Pete Carroll won the Super Bowl, he did an interview talking about how the inner game, how he bought into that, and how that's his philosophy, and that's why he is the coach that he is. His players love what he does, and that's what he lives on, is that philosophy. And you can see that it works so well for him and his players because he doesn't try to change players, make them into something that they're not. He takes their strengths and amplifies their strengths, puts them in their system so everyone knows exactly what their part is in their system, and he lets them go, he lets them play, he lets them have fun, but they're focused. He allows them to take out the distractions so that your body and what you're, you know, automatically knows what it's doing, and they become laser beams in their position and in what they know they need to do. You should read the book sometime, The Inner Game of Tennis. It's not about tennis. It's about something more than tennis. But that's what he bought into. That's what they do. We're not like the Giants who like to change people's strength to make them into something else. So in other words, if he has a tight end that's a pass-catching tight end and that's what he does, that's what they amplify. That's what they allow him to do and do it well and do it great. Not trying to turn him into a blocker. They've got the blocker for that. They'll have a tight end that is the blocker, and that's his strength. And just like like Kiwi, you know, they took him, who was a defensive end, and he could have been a great defensive end. We tried to turn him into a linebacker. We took Adrian Tracy, who was actually a linebacker, and we tried to turn him into a defensive end. How did that work out? He was mediocre. Kiwi has never been the same since he's been playing linebacker. And now we're taking Bromley, pumping him up, putting 30, 40 more pounds on him.
Hey, first of all, it's 15 or 20. It's not 30 or 40, Charlie. Relax.
All right. But his game is disruption. His game is quick step. His game is to get in the face of the quarterback. His game is not Mankin. He's not a run, you know, a big, fat run stopper, a muscular run stopper. They're trying to change him, you know, and that's the thing that I see Reese does not get and he doesn't understand. So, I might send him the book, The Inner Game, but he's so arrogant he wouldn't read it anyway.
Oh, that's not fair, Charlie. Jerry is not an arrogant guy. He is not an arrogant guy.
You know him?
He's not. I think I like to think I know Jerry Reese fairly well, and he is.
So when you're walking
trust me,
down the
he is
hall,
extremely
does he actually
humble.
Say hello? Does he actually say hello to you, or does
yeah,
he like
of course
look
he
the
does.
Other way?
He says hello to me by name, asks me how I'm doing. We have conversations on the lunch line. Sure, we do.
Okay, that takes a little perception off.
All right, Charlie. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Okay, John. You too.
201-939-4513. Oh, Charlie. All right, by the way, I want to play some of this onshore roll thing here. I'm not sure. He has a great cut for deep into this. I want to play it from the top. Hopefully we'll get to it pretty quickly here. But here's what onshore roll had to say about the whole Hosley Wilhill thing yesterday.
You know, obviously, you know, I'm extremely disappointed. And, you know, when I heard that the cut was finalized, I can't say it was a shocker to myself. You know, Will knew what situation, you know, that he put the Giants in and he kind of forced their hand. And at that point in time, you know, you can't really depend on Will to help us out and, you know, to really do anything for us, you know, if you're suspended, you know, repeatedly, you know, season after season after season. So, you know, I spoke to Will. You know, Will and I have had several, you know, chats about this, and you know, he's full aware of, you know, what took place and what should have taken place, and you know, every man has to be accountable for their own actions, And like I said, you know, it didn't surprise me. It stinged, you know, it stinged like hell. You know, Will's like a little brother to myself, you know, and he's a phenomenal player. You know, probably one of the most gifted safeties that we have. And for him to keep moving himself, you know, in the wrong direction, you know, it's not a good thing.
It seemed like he kind of kept himself in track when he was here, you know, with you guys throughout the season. Was there that worry within the locker room that he might slip up when he came home? And he, you know, was away from the Giants and was away from his teammates.
Well, that's something we worry about, not just Will Hill, but with just players in general. You know, the offseason is a long time off. You know, guys have, you know, the money to pretty much do what they want to do and the freedom to do what they want to do. So, but, you know, as professionals, you know, you have to go out there and carry yourself in a certain manner to understand that, you know, the do's and don'ts of this league and, you know, even within yourself. And, you know, we're all aware of that here. So we know right from wrong. It's, you know, it's too easy to do right, you know, instead of, you know, as opposed to, you know, keep doing wrong. So, you know, I mean, you have to take it. It is what it is.
With that and J-Ron kind of coming back to back, do you feel like something needs to be said, or is it just kind of an isolated thing and it's not part of a bigger issue?
You know, I don't feel anything needs to be said. I think, like I say, you know, every individual has to be accountable for his own actions. And, you know, they're both adults. They're both men. They know right from wrong. They know the do's and don'ts of this league. They know, you know, if you're going to be tested, when you're going to be tested, you know. It's like I say, it's too easy to do right to keep doing wrong. And you know, this is my 10th year, and I've lived it. So I know, you know, not every guy's going to be like myself. I'm not going to be like every other guy. But like I say, once again, you know, it's too easy to do right, you know, to keep doing wrong. So that's something that we don't need around here. You know, we don't need to have, you know, that pub, you know, guys sitting up on Twitter, you know, saying what's going on, you know, what's up with the secondary, this, that, and the other. And, I mean, it's a bad reflection. I mean, it doesn't look good.
How surprised.
That, my friend, is a leader. That's why Anchorol is the leader of this defense. Right there. Strong words. And the ones to me that are most important, it's too easy not to do wrong. What he means by that is that you know when the tests are coming. You know what they test for. Don't do it. Not that tough. But I thought those are great words from Anchorol right there. 201-939-4513. Jeff's up in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's going on?
How you doing today, Johnny?
Doing well, Jeff. How are you?
Good. I'm doing okay. Just on a real serious note, John, I'd like to have all the listeners just take a minute out to remember what the World War II veterans did in the invasion of Normandy today, 70 years ago. They hadn't made the sacrifices they made and did the job that they had done. Our whole world could have been a whole lot different if they would have been pushed into the sea that day.
Hey, look, Jeff, 100%, and, you know, a lot of people, and obviously this is not to diminish the sacrifices today, but obviously, you know, we had a lot of casualties and deaths in the wars in Afghanistan, the wars in Iraq, and obviously all of them tragedies, but for some perspective, more Americans died in one day storming that beach in Normandy than died in those two conflicts combined, which is amazing when you think about it.
Well, it is, and I'm proud to say that my father was there. He was there that day in the 1st Infantry Division in the 32nd Field Artillery Battalion, and you know, he saw it all, what was going on, and I'm very thankful to all the veterans of any war. And particularly the men from World War II, because, you know, they're passing away at approximately 600 people a day. So
wow, I didn't know that.
Someday they'll be all gone. But it's important to realize the history of it and how we got there from there to here.
Jeff, I'm so happy you called and you said it, because you're 100% right. They're all heroes. They all did a phenomenal job. And there is a reason that group of men are called the greatest generation, because the sacrifices they made and the job they did, really fighting for the future of this planet in World War II. You know, you could talk about all the other wars we fought for various reasons. I mean, if World War II isn't won between the Soviets, between the Nazis, between Imperial Japan, a lot of bad people would have been running an awful lot of this planet. It would have been a very bad situation.
Yeah, well, you're entirely correct, buddy. But anyways, on a lighter note, I'd like to to know what you've, you know, if you've seen anybody stand out on the offense or defense at the OTAs. I know you can't tell a whole lot about what's going on, but I was just interested in that.
Yeah, you know what, Jeff, I'll say this. Look, like I always like to say, you can't tell a whole lot without contact. So judging the offensive line, judging the defensive line, it's hard to tell. A couple things that I think have stuck out for me. I've seen JPP and Demontre Moore be pretty active over their defensive end. But let me say this. They're also going up against Charles Brown and James Brewer. So obviously you have to judge their performance based on the competition they're going up against. So grain of salt. You know, they have, you know, moved JPP to both ends of the line, which I think is interesting. I think they like the way he's developed as a run stopper, so maybe you'll see him over there at Tuck's old spot a little bit more than maybe we expected. Dominique Rogers, Cromartie to me looks like the real deal. He's the fastest player maybe that I've seen with the Giants since I've been here. I mean, he's all over these wide receivers in pass coverage. He looks like the real deal. Quinton Demps is getting a lot of play in that second and third safety spot. He's returning kicks. They're using Trindon Holiday more as a wide receiver than I expected. He's been in the slot an awful lot. And he's got more of an opportunity. Darrell Jernigan is away from the team because of the death in the family. And Trindon Holiday's been able to, you know, really step in and do a really good job with that. Jameel McClain, very vocal on defense. He seems to be developing into a leader alongside John Beeson and Antrell Roll. Let me think. None of the tight ends have really, you know, they've all of them have had a couple moments here or there, but no one really, to me, has stuck out. Odell Beckham, when he's been on the field, his quickness and explosiveness is great. I think those are probably the main things that have probably stuck out for me, I'd say.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. I just, you know, wondering what was going on with that. And by the way, congratulations on your upcoming nuptials.
Nuptials, I think you're going for there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you know what I'm getting.
I know exactly what you mean.
When is the precise date for that, John?
That is coming up on June 28th. My last show will be on, let's see, the 28th, my last show will be Tuesday, June 24th. Then I'm gone for 2.5 weeks. So you got me for about, let's see, it'll be 12 more shows after today. And then I will be in Iowa and Thailand for the better part of 3 weeks. Then I'll be back a week before training camp starts.
Yeah, well, I hope things over there have settled down somewhat. So,
you know what,
you
have,
be
actually.
Careful over there.
No, I will, Jeff. I appreciate it. You know, the coup is still in place. They've canceled the curfew everywhere that's, like, not the capital. So it is a lot safer. Obviously, I'll keep my eyes and ears open, but it shouldn't be quite as bad.
Okay. Well, I've been married over, you know, close to 45 years, and I'll tell you, on the 28th, The world, your world as you've known it, is going to come to an abrupt end.
So, why is that? Jeff, why is that? Give me a preview here.
I'm not saying that in a negative way. Okay, buddy. You have a good day.
Thank you,
Talk
Jeff.
To you soon.
Oh, boy. All I ever get from all the married guys, you don't know what you're in for, son. Now, how across the Bob Papa, John, you sure you know what you're doing? Oh, man. People trying to scare me. 201-939-4513. Solomon seemed happy the last couple of days. He just got married, so maybe the doom and gloom hasn't set in yet. I don't know. Let's go to Bill down in Dallas. Bill, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, good morning, John. How you doing?
Doing great, Bill. How are you?
Congratulations. John, Bangkok, Thailand is not the place you go on a honeymoon. It's where you have your bachelor party.
Well, that is true, but that's why we're going to be in Thailand for about 10 days. We're only spending literally like a day and a half. We're going to go see the big Buddhist temple they have there. We're going to go see the floating markets. Then we're getting out of Dodge. We're going to spend a lot of time on the beach in southern Thailand. So that's going to be the primary place we're going to go.
Perfect, because I was going to mention the floating market, the reclining Buddha, and you're going to go see that. That's
exactly
amazing. And then the beach. Don't eat the damn chicken on a stick. It's not chicken, it's monkey.
Is that true?
It's true. I'm honest to God, it's true.
No chicken on a stick. Got it. No chicken on a stick.
Right. Okay, my Giants thing is this. I haven't heard much about Heinoski. How's he doing, or do you know anything about him, or what's going on?
Heinoski's 100% healthy. He's out there. He's doing stuff. He's blocking. He's catching passes. And I think the battle between him and John Connor you know, it's kind of under the radar, but I think it's going to be one of the more interesting ones to watch in the spring and summer. And I think both guys do a little bit different. I think Connor's probably the more violent, physical lead blocker. Hanoski's probably a little bit more versatile. He's a better pass catcher. So I think it'll be a very interesting competition between the two. Here's why I think I'm going to give the advantage to Connor. Right now, I have Peyton Hillis on this roster. I think he makes the team. And with his ability to kind of swing as a pass protector and a pass catcher, that might be a little bit of a redundancy with Hanoski's skill set as a fullback. So they might want a guy like Connor, who's a little bit more one-dimensional but is really good at that one dimension, since they have a guy like Hillis who can pass block and can't catch the ball out of the backfield. But we'll see.
Okay, one more question, yeah. John, and I'm out of here. Our running backs, the guys that we've got, the rookie and the guy from the Raiders, was it?
Rashad Jennings, yeah.
Is this going to be the punch we need?
I think so. I think this is the best group of Giant running backs they've had here since I've been here. And that's including the Ahmad Bradshaw, Brandon Jacobs, Derek Ward team. I think this group of running backs is more talented than that group of running backs. I love Andre Williams. I think he could be a better player than Bradshaw and Jacobs. I think Rashad Jennings is a very good all-around. I think Rashad Jennings is the most versatile, well-rounded Giants running back since Tiki Barber. And I believe that David Wilson is the most explosive Giants running back that's been here since I've been a member of this organization since 2007. So I think this group of running backs, if everything comes together, could be excellent and could be the foundation of a great running game that really could play a much bigger role in this offense than it has the last two or three years.
Hey, John, congratulations. Have a great wedding, and I'll see you where I'll listen to you when you get back.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Bill. Thanks for the call, man. And
remember the monkey.
I will. Remember the monkey. Oh, man. I feel I'm going to be like Indiana Jones out there, I feel like. Going to have, like, the eyeball soup. I do hope to ride an elephant, though. That should be fun. Here's the trick, though. And this is the tricky thing about finding a place in Thailand. Everyone has the elephants you can ride, right? But here's the problem. A lot of the people don't take care of the elephants well. So, you know, you put the saddles on, they have sores, they end up, like, you know, getting infections and, you know, God forbid, dying and things like that. So you don't want to go to the place that treats the elephants poorly because then you're contributing to the problem. So you have to find a place where you can go enjoy yourself, but at the same time, go to a place that treats the elephants well. So that's tricky. We're also going to be going one day. We're going to be in Cambodia to see Angkor Wat, which is one of the seven wonders of the world, if I'm not mistaken. One of the largest archaeological ruins in the world. And I have a friend who quit his high-paying producer job over at HBO and traveled around the world for 345 days, 1 year. Europe, South America, Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Asia, all around. He was all over the place. He said Angkor Wat was the coolest thing he saw in that whole year. So I'm looking forward to that. That should be fun. 201-939-4513. Only one more caller on the line. We're close to 10:30. We'll take one more, then we'll say goodbye. Let's go to Derek in Atlanta. Derek, you're our cleanup hitter today. What's up, pal?
Hey, how's it going, John?
I'm doing well, Derek. How are you?
I'm good. I was going to say that only two more drug suspensions for the Giants, and then we'll be the Seattle of the East. And maybe we'll win the Super Bowl or something. But I was comparing the NFL. It's like a joke to me because, John, you ever see the signs on the side of the road that when you pass it, it tells you what speed you're going?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So if the police was really serious about stopping speeders, every 10 miles they would have a speed. They would have one of those traffic light things work that shows your speed and sends you a ticket. They don't do that. I mean, they have speed traps out there now and then, and to deter speeding, but you know, just so things won't get out of hand.
Exactly.
And that's what the NFL is doing, because what I got out of Antrel Rolls, I kind of read between the lines, is that you know when the test is coming. You need to be smart enough not to fail the test, okay? If the NFL was serious about marijuana, stopping marijuana or any other drugs from happening, they would do random testing year-round, not tipping off the players of when the test is coming. They don't want to do that because they'll lose most of their stars to the league.
No, Derek, you're right. So, if they really did want to get super serious about marijuana, they would do the testing for that the same way they do testing for performance-enhancing drugs, and they don't. You're right.
And, you know, I look at, you know, same thing happened in baseball not too long, you know, with amphetamines and with other enhancements, you know, players. They, you know, you can see him. You know, all of a sudden, Nolan Ryan goes from 92 miles an hour when he's 35 years old to 99 miles an hour the next year. You know, it concerns me when I see some of these players when they you come back after the offseason. In the offseason, they gain 10 pounds of muscle. Well, normal. It's kind of hard to put 10 pounds of muscle on in the offseason. I mean, the offseason is not even that long anymore. So, you know, when you finish football in maybe February now, and you're back, you know, in OTAs a couple of months later.
Well, Derek, unfortunately for the Giants, they've had about 4 months' worth of off seasons the last 2 years because they haven't made the postseason. So you'll have January, February, March, and then half of April before the guys have to report.
Yeah, it just concerns me sometimes when you walk out of football, no one says anything. Like, let's take, Peyton Hillis. Okay, no one said anything about what Peyton Hillis looked like when the Giants finished the season. But you walk in and he looks like an Adonis now, you know. And then that just concerns me. Like, okay, what's really going on?
Well, Derek. Honestly, in terms of Peyton Hillis specifically, he was always a really big cut guy. I haven't noticed much of a difference in his physique, to be quite honest with you.
What's that guy named David Boston? Was his name David Boston?
Yeah, David Boston. You know, that's good memory. Former wide receiver for the Arizona Cardinals. He had a monster year, over 100 catches. Went into the offseason, put on, I think, about 15, 20 pounds of muscle. Came back, kept pulling all his muscles, couldn't move around well anymore. And his career basically went to the toilet.
Right. I mean, I'm like, and then they showed him a picture of him, like, basically in a T-shirt. And this guy looks like an Olympic bodybuilder. You know, I'm like, okay, how do you get cut like that in a couple of days, you know? Well, you know, and I'm just saying, you know, that was my point today, is that if the NFL was serious, they would do random testing year-round. But I guess all they want to do is deter the smoking marijuana. And so I don't think that since the NFL just want to deter it, then, you know, the players, it looked like J'Ron Hosley today, you know, lost it, you know. He looks befooled, like I'm sitting up here and looking like I'm a lost child or something like that. And, you know, just take the punishment and go on, you know. You didn't do whatever. You need to get with the professionals and find out what they're doing, not to get caught, if that's what the game is, you know.
I appreciate it, Derek. Thanks for the call, man. Have a good weekend.
All right, talk to you later.
Everybody, good job on the phones. Good job on Twitter this morning on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Thanks again to Mike Jones from the Washington Post. I'm just saying it right now. Monday, we're breaking down the Giants in context with the rest of the NFC East. I'm going to play devil's advocate to everybody out there. So call in. We'll talk about your early Giant predictions, where you think they'll land the NFC East, compare and contrast the Cowboys, the Redskins, and the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll have some fun. And I'm going to be a little negative. Charlie will like that. I'm going to try to fight you guys off. I'm going to put you guys to the challenge here and let you try to convince me how the Giants are going to win the NFC East. And I will play devil's advocate. All right? So that'll be Monday morning. We'll also be joined by Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus at some point next week to talk about the stuff that's been going on with the team. We'll catch up on the OTAs for next week before minicamp, 3 days of that the week after. And then we don't see the players again until July 21st. Back here at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center. And I'll be gone for 2.5 weeks of that. So that's the quiet time. The Tino and Meadow will keep you going, keep them company. They'll keep things interesting. And then we'll see you getting close to training camp. But we still got 4 more OTAs, 3 more days of minicamp, veterans mandatory minicamp to get through before we get to that. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have an excellent weekend. The weather's supposed to be beautiful in the mid-80s. Sun the entire weekend long here in the tri-state area. Enjoy it. Summer is coming. And so is NFL football. Quicker than you might think. We'll see you on Monday on Giants.com. Everybody have a fantastic weekend. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you on Monday.